Beta Boys Media presents the Beta Block. The Beta Block.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Beta Block. That's right, it's the Beta Block, and this week it's of course me, Andy, and if you're a gamer, of course my gaming tag is Andy, aka Glugun with two N's. But I'm sitting with sort of non-gamers today. This is the Pulp Special, and I'm going to get into that, but I'm with two creators of a pulp zine called Shit Show, and sitting across from me is Matt Pogorgis, okay, I got that right, and then John Borges. How you guys doing?
Great, man. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, thanks for coming on the show. I told you guys off the show that we've been a little bit more subjective. We used to break down, you know, like, we used to go down a gauntlet of entertainment news, but I think it's been better to kind of like break it down more subjectively. Last week we talked about the Mayweather fight. The week before that, esports, and then a bunch of other stuff. But you guys have an interesting zine, or it is a zine, I guess. But I guess I want you guys to just tell our audience what Shit Show is, and you know, where do you find it. But let's break down exactly what it is, and then we'll break it down even further from there. Who wants to go? Who All wants right. to hit it? First, tell me, John, why don't you tell me what do you do for Shit Show? What is Shit Show? Break it down, and then tell me how you creatively are involved in Shit Show. And then, Matt, I would love to hear your side of it as well.
Cool. Okay, so Shit Show is it's a pulp magazine. It's kind of like a throwback to the men's adventure pulp magazines from, I'd say probably from like the 40s up until like the late 60s generally. That's like that's at least the time period that we sort of took our creative cues from. They are illustrated short stories. Generally, when you think of men's adventure pulp, you think of like there's some woman with heaving breasts held prisoner by some mad doctor. And, you know, there's like a gorilla with a swastika on his arm and there's some guy with a heaving chest coming to save her. And that's more or less what we do. So, you know, it's...
So you save people all the time?
Yeah. Oh, but back to the magazine. what we do is we write modern pulp fiction, but very consciously in the sort of really unhinged lunatic style that became really popular in the mid-century magazines. So science fiction, horror, action, hard-boiled, and noir, stuff like that.
Right, so someone that probably doesn't know much about pulp could actually reference Pulp Fiction's mm-hmm. art style to a very similar style, or that's kind of pulpy, you know.
I would say so.
In a mainstream way, you know.
Yeah, I think, but pulp is people in shitty situations. I think the same with noir. It's very dark.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, you could have Pulp Fiction originated from the old pulp paper magazines. They were cheap, and as are we. Aviation, because aviation was new at the time, early 1900s.
Right.
So they had aviation stories. They had Doc Savage, was kind of like an Indiana Jones type dude.
I know of the name Doc Savage. Yeah. I think a lot of people have, but they don't know who he is.
Yeah,
I think
he's sort of like the...
Isn't The Rock going to do...
They've been talking about the.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So
what
yeah.
doesn't The Rock do? These
exactly.
Days?
Yeah.
He's actually, I think, a great candidate. I think he's really the only guy that should
do
play Doc
Savage.
Yeah.
Because he kind of is Doc Savage in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. They should have done that before Baywatch. But.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. I mean, Doc Savage is more or less the flashpoint for all sort of superheroes. Really.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Doc Savage, the Shadow, the mm-hmm. Spirit, those guys were pretty much the start of comic books as well as Pulp Fiction
yeah.
for the most part.
So let's, and how does that relate to what a zine is? Because it's technically a zine, right? Or what is a zine? I want to know what a zine is. Do you guys know what zines are?
It's an independent magazine, really.
More or less. Yeah,
we're a bootstrapped magazine that doesn't have ads in it. And you can make a zine.
So you got rid of the mag and you just keep the zine.
Yeah,
and you're cool.
Yeah.
You're independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
the mag part's too expensive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when you're poor and you're po and you can't afford the OR.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We couldn't afford the mag. And so, we very consciously made it a zine in the beginning because, you know, we came up with punk rock zines, you know, the sort of the classic stuff. I'm a little older than Matt, but when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, that was a very vibrant subculture. And there was something really exciting about getting your hands on one of these, a lot of the times, handmade zines, and thinking, like, not only did somebody put the time and effort and care into making this individual piece, but also I'm getting an unfiltered view into this person's creative point of view.
Yeah, there's no editors and there's no filter there. You know?
Exactly. It's like when you watch a really grimy homemade horror film from like the late 70s. You're like, holy shit, somebody made this. You know, like there wasn't a committee standing around deciding what was, like, everything is sort of unfiltered. And so we saw a lot of parallels between that and the hip hop mixtape. Matt and I are both huge hip hop heads. And okay. And so whether it's like the stuff that 50 Cent very much popularized in the late 90s, or the stuff that like trap music did around the same time.
Yeah, or even Wu-Tang early 90s. You know, we basically equate ourselves like, what would Wu-Tang do?
Without any joke, that is 100% a primary question we ask ourselves every time. We're like, well, the Wu-Tang kind of did this or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
RZA was, you know, in this.
That's awesome.
Because in a lot of ways, like, I think that the Wu-Tang aesthetic was so effective because it had the same hallmarks that really good pulp literature and pulp fiction has, which is it's stripped of any artistic pretense. It's highly artistic. Like,
sure.
I think the paintings and the artwork, which we do as well for our magazine, the paintings are what kind of drew us in.
Yeah.
At least I'll speak for myself.
And the pulp fiction writing was considered kind of trashy, but I mean, you got guys like Jim Thompson. It was prose. It's very well written, but it didn't have the respect that other authors would have, you know, that were out of the pulp fiction realm. So same with rap at that time.
Exactly. Like, it was the first literature and art form that gave me that same sort of underdog rush that rap or punk rock gave me.
Wow.
You know, where it's really like, when you really dig into it and treat it as seriously as it should be treated, you read a guy like Jim Thompson or Donald Westlake or something like that, and you're like, oh my God, like, these guys, this is literature. Like, this could stand up to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, you get people from our, you know, you get your Tarantinos and your people like that, who, of course, very publicly understood that there was so much to be gleaned from that kind of work, that now it's got a bigger voice than maybe it had in 30 years.
Yeah. And then another, example of pulp fiction being like rap music kind of is Dashiell Hammett. He worked for the Pinkertons. Like, he was, you know, these dudes were blue collar guys, and you know, that's,
they
the
weren't
same,
pussies.
Yeah. No. That's the same with rap and early Hollywood, really. A lot of the actors, you know, you got William Holden was, you know, a paratrooper in World War II and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think William Holden was, or
it wouldn't surprise
me. Whoever the cop was in The Godfather that got punched by
Sterling Hayden.
Yeah. Okay, confused, but yes, that he like jumped in like in Normandy or
but
something.
But Bill Holden was no wimp either.
No, he was not.
But I think it's an interesting that you bring that up, because I think one of the reasons why there's such nostalgia for older stuff, you know, whether it's people loving vintage clothing or vintage movies or TVs or books, is that we live in a time where so-called street credibility is not as much of a factor.
No.
As it's not a necessary point of entry.
Right.
And you can see that with rap music. I'm not making a value judgment one way or another, but street credibility is not like it was maybe 20 years ago, where it was absolutely essential. And the guys that were writing and acting and doing the art back in those days, their primary source of higher education was not college. It was combat service.
Hmm.
You know, so most of the people that achieved anything really, really exceptional during that time, they're all World War II vets or World War I or Korea or whatever it is.
Hmm.
And so nothing was theoretical, and there was there was no pretense. It was all just like, let's just cut to the blood and guts of the story. And that that style really appealed to us.
Yeah, and then you got Rod Serling was in the Air Force in World War II, and he came out with Twilight Zone, which is very influential to us.
Sure, so. I am actually a huge Twilight Zone fan.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I watched as a kid reruns after reruns. I've probably seen most of all of them. Big fan of that style. So I see he had kind of a pulpy.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like, very much now so. Now that you guys brought it up, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, he really did have that kind of style. So let's get down to what do you guys do for your comic zine? Like, who does the drawings? Who do you guys both do?
John does most of the artwork, pretty much all of the stuff that's in the zine itself.
Okay.
I'll throw some stuff up on Instagram.
The gap is closing,
yeah.
I will say. The gap between Matt and I is closing.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to link your side, and so if anyone's listening to this, you know, just check down in the feed, and you could look at it and what this art style is, and you could actually see it in the. I love your shit show title. You know, your logo's awesome. It's pretty cool, and that's another thing I wanted to talk to you about is like, how do you feel about the name being Shit Show? Now. I know that like we're in a day and age where is that okay? Is that you know, I know that off the cast you said that changes are happening, but let's get down to how you came up with Shit Show, and I actually like the name.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
Yeah, thank you.
We love it. Yeah.
Just like, was that like, did you guys have the name before you started everything?
We were just bouncing around ideas. John texted it to me and I liked it. I wanted something that my parents would be really proud of. And so Shit Show, their followers on Instagram, they love it. I think John, like most of our ideas when we're not, you know, in our writer's room, which is the public library, we will text back and forth different ideas and bounce off of each other that way.
So what is the first issue? First of all, how many issues are out as of now?
Well, we actually graduated from a straight up like handmade zine after the first year of our existence, and mainly because I no longer worked at a company I won't mention. That I had, I had tremendous access to their copy
later.
Machine.
Yeah, mention it later. No.
Very good copy machine.
They'd be like, "Man, John's really dedicated. He's always staying late to work, and like I always see
making
him in
copies.
There, just hacking up paper.
We're out of toner all the time."
Yeah, and then I thought I was so slick, and then I like an idiot, didn't realize that my computer from my desk, like. Had a log of every time I had printed and how many pages.
Oh my God.
That's not why I left the company.
Right. Right.
But, but I was extra slick because I had actually never changed my login name. So it was somebody who didn't work at the company anymore.
Nice. Like,
his ghost is making thousands of copies.
That's funny.
But we started out by making them, by hand and distributing them that way. And then we graduated to, like a slicker, magazine about a year ago.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, probably
very recent.
Yeah. And so we're a monthly magazine, and I guess it would only have been about three or four months ago because we have probably five
because I mean you
right because we had to develop
and,
yeah I had a baby right?
That happened. Yeah. That gets in the way.
And so yeah, but he's not a bad writer. He's got pretty good ideas.
He's really good ideas.
Yeah, and so
that's true.
And so anyway, we graduated to like a bigger magazine that's full sized and very kind of slick. So we're on our fourth issue.
Yeah, we're on our fourth, and we had four of the original the handmade zines.
Yeah,
so,
which are now super valuable.
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Yeah. Worth a lot of money on eBay.
Especially the ones that I stapled wrong.
Yeah, those are the ones. Those are the ones right there, man. You got to hold on to those.
Could you give me a brief synopsis of like the story from maybe the first issue? Or is it a bunch of stories?
It's an anthology.
Yeah. So
could
there's
you give
four
us
per magazine.
Could you give me a little bit of a synopsis of a couple of the stories maybe? Or ones that you guys really liked writing that maybe people listening might want to check out?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of for the
so
first
well,
one.
We had, well, we wrote it, so now we don't remember.
We had Android. Yeah, we had Android Exorcism.
Oh yeah, Android Exorcism.
Which yeah. is
these titles are great.
Yeah,
Satan
so,
hacks the cloud.
Yeah. What happened is they this takes place in the near future.
Okay.
Where so what they can do these days is they can map people's brain activity, whether they're mapping autism or certain schizophrenia and such.
Sure.
And so the logical progression for us was, oh well.
There's an exorcism, and this guy wants to.
Hey, you could map demonic possession,
yeah. Sure.
Theoretically,
right?
And so what they do is they map this person who's demonically possessed, and then they say, "Oh God, what have we done?" And they stick it in a vault.
Yeah,
and then
the Pope dies pretty much immediately. The scientist dies, and it's just forgotten for hundreds of years. And then some guy comes in and, he opens it up kind of like
they hack
kinda
the
like
Vatican.
WikiLeaks. Yeah, they hack the Vatican like WikiLeaks.
Right.
Not knowing that this shit's, on the cloud.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting.
At this time, everything is robotic.
Like it's like Blade Runner. Everything is androids everywhere.
Yeah. Right. You've got, your maid is a robot.
Right.
The gardener is a robot.
The girlfriend's a robot.
Yeah. There's a lot of sex bots in this world
because
it's shit show. And, self-driving cars, everything, it's connected to this one cloud that,
becomes
now
demonically possessed.
Okay.
So every android on Earth is possessed by demons.
Yeah, and like dogs. Like if you have a kid and you don't want to tell them like that their dog died, you just get a robot that looks like a dog.
Who's now a devil
That never dies. And then, that is now demonically possessed. And
see, that sounds fun. I mean, it also has like a sci-fi element.
Oh, yeah, big time.
We keep a pretty good balance. Like we... and then there was my first narco sub.
Yeah, my first narco sub is probably my favorite on that issue.
My first narco sub?
Yeah, yeah. So it's about
Is it about a narc that like buys Subway sandwiches?
What? A lot of cocaine.
It's a guy doing like volunteer work in Colombia and gets kidnapped and forced to build a narco sub. You're familiar with narco subs?
I actually am not, so I'd love...
Okay.
They're
small homemade submarines
oh.
that are used to smuggle cocaine from Colombia to the United States.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, it's insane.
Yeah,
they build them in the middle of the jungle. This is totally real. They build them in the middle of the jungle
where there's no water or
there's no helicopters overhead.
Yeah,
that
yeah
can
you
see
got
them
so
and you can
so,
have like this. You
so
know,
you got
whole,
these cartel motherfuckers
yeah.
like building these submarines in the middle of the jungle, and then they put them in the ocean. Two dudes,
not tested,
full of cocaine,
yeah.
full just filled to the brim with blow. And they these little Honda engines.
Yeah, they drive
underwater.
Blind.
Could you imagine? being underwater in this thing that some
it's going
fucking
from
dude
like
built.
Columbia to Miami.
Do you know how far underwater they're going, or how?
You know, they used to be only semi-submersible. I got way into narco subs for a while.
Super interesting.
They used to be only semi-submersible, but then people kept catching them, and so. So before they really kind of like ran their course, because then the DEA got real slick about them. But like when they were at their height, they would have fully submersible, like made of fiberglass and some even made of steel, like or whatever metal, go straight up underwater, like a submarine. Like they would get Russian submarine plans.
Yeah.
And they would like build so
our story is Chinese submarine plans.
Yeah, because they kidnapped this guy because he's Asian.
Sure,
but he's
and
Cambodian
they assume,
or something.
Yeah, but he's like this American kid who grew up. He's just
grew up in Minnesota.
Physically looks Asian.
Right,
but he's not. You know what I mean?
He doesn't like that.
And so they assume that he can read the instructions, and he's scared to death. So he's like. Yeah, I can totally read the instructions. You know what I mean? Just because otherwise he's afraid he's going to get killed. And then he has to drive the thing with his nemesis in the through shark infested waters.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I think pulp in general.
I like that.
It's like for our big takeaway is that you're not shackled by the need for subtlety.
Sure.
You can tell these really big stories without having to have any kind of like clever. Conceit or anything like I mean hopefully they're clever but it's like you can just sort of like go balls to the wall as far as the same way that you can musically in rap or punk rock or something
like
that.
Yeah, or with an 80s action flick.
Yeah. We're huge 80s action
flick. Like Die Hard and that
heads.
Stuff.
Love 80s. Yeah. Oh, anything
80s. It's the greatest. Exactly. I mean, 80s action movies, 80s action movies are like, you know, it's like, there's like Taken, which is like a pulpy story, but like, or there's Commando.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like more basically the same story.
It's the same story.
But one of them has Arnold Schwarzenegger just mowing
back in his
down.
Like days when he was, he was huge back in the
day. Oh, my God. Yeah. He was so
he's
ripped.
Still, he's still pretty big. He's still pretty big at 70.
Yeah.
He just looks like Leatherface.
Yeah. Oh, God. I love Commando, you know?
That's like, a movie I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah. And it's like you don't sit there and be like, hold on, wait a minute.
Actually, like any Arnold movie from then, you know, Total Recall.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So. One of the things I love about Commando is when Radon Chong, first of all, Radon Chong's in it, which is awesome.
Right.
But like he's stuck in the police thing, remember, in the paddy wagon? And she fires a bazooka at the paddy wagon
in an
attempt to rescue him. But she's so confident that it won't hurt him. That it's a sensible thing, and you're watching the movie, and you're like, "Oh my God, yeah she's totally gonna
sense.
Get him out."
Yeah,
like, yeah, of course, that's what you do.
That
anybody, like, you put, you know, if had one of us in there, they'd be like, "She's gonna fucking kill all of them." Oh, you know what I mean? So it's like larger than life is a big thing for us.
Yeah, and that's what we go after.
Yeah, I like. Okay, so let's talk about, like, we're in 2017. Mm. At least I think it's 2017. What does the millennial generation know about pulp? Do you think they know it? Do you think you guys have a hard time bringing in people that are not interested, or is it? It's so niche-y. Like,
there are a lot of it's more from an older generation. But I mean, True Detective was huge.
True. Yeah,
and that
which
I
is mean, pure pulp.
Pure You're pulp. Right. David, right. The name True Detective was from one of the men's mags that we emulate.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, that's an example of pulp. You know, Pulp Fiction, obviously.
Any episode of Law and Order.
Yeah.
Any episode of
the noir.
That stuff. Like, you know, it's funny because the type of stories that we talk about all the time, like. But then Law and Order SVU will be on, and I'll be like, "Blah, God!" You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a certain discipline of writing that's like we can talk about LMN, right? I mean,
yeah,
I mean not so. In such super detail, we were hired to write certain stories for the Lifetime Movie Network, and it was kind of awesome.
Yeah,
because
we watched a lot of Lifetime.
Because they're great.
Yeah.
And like, I think like those are purely pulp. It's like a drinking game. Every time we say pulp, take a shot.
Sure.
But
it's the pulp special.
You'll die. but the plot twists are so muscular and so definitive and so like, and the stories are so insane, you know, like
true.
and so it was, we felt really, really at home. So I think the tenets of pulp, most of our younger fans find us because they think that we're a Quentin Tarantino tribute.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At first, and then they
stick around.
The crazy artwork. They love the Weasels Rip My Flesh.
Yes.
Men's Mag covers.
That's awesome.
Which are just basically you throw any rodent or snake in the mix, and it's just a guy getting attacked by, and a woman getting attacked on the cover by these animals.
Any animal can be a deadly, horrific.
Trying to kill it with a machete or a rock or something. So those do really well on our Instagram.
Yeah. Well, so, I think the art transcends generational divides, and also like, we have a pretty strong following when it comes to like this sort of like pinup subculture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And burlesque. We have a lot of relationships with like burlesque individuals and rockabilly and like all that kind of stuff. You know, the sort of that appreciation for when a certain kind of art form and a certain kind of aesthetic look was done so well.
Yeah.
That like, I mean, nobody, like the rockabilly folks don't look the same as, I mean, you know, they don't look exactly like Buddy Holly. It's evolved and it's become modernized and stuff.
And pulps have evolved as well to, you know, Stephen King is pretty much
probably,
you know,
the world's
a lot
greatest
of his stuff,
pulp writer.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of, especially short stories from the Night Shift when he was first starting, and he was writing for these men's mags like Cavalier and Stag, but also Dennis Lehane, James Ellroy. I'm trying to think of guys that are still living that we.
Yeah, well, there's a publisher out there that
Hard Case Crime.
Hard Case Crimes, and what they do is they they publish early novels by best-selling authors. A lot of the time they were writing under pseudonyms, which we do as a nod to that tradition.
Right. Yeah.
And so to answer your first question completely, we write half the we each write half the stories, and then we each do illustrations in the magazine.
We took that answer.
We
took that out like a Grateful Dead song, and we brought it right back.
Song
are we playing?
So if you want to, if you wanted to have something to put in the beginning to contextualize all this, all of the stories and all of the art are generated by Matt and I. From the initial concept to the final delivery, it's the two of us.
And we're the editors, but if we had honest to God editors, we wouldn't be called Shit Show. So
yeah. You know? Well, let's get back to the name. Do you guys, I think John, you mentioned that possibly the name might change. Is that something you guys want to talk about?
Well, we're going to do different projects that are like Shit Show. The magazine is one aspect of what we do.
Sure.
We also, we just came out with our first movie that's making like festival rounds right now.
Thanks for reminding me. I forgot. You guys have movies too.
Yeah.
So we should talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So it's the same.
Let's do that.
It's the same. We do animated films in the same painting style as our magazine.
Yeah, so it's like moving oil paint. We call it Hopper on a Bender. It's like Edward Hopper. animated.
Yeah, because Edward Hopper is one of our favorite painters.
Oh, okay.
The Nighthawks guy.
See, here's the thing. I don't know shit about pulp comics, and that's why I like this episode, because there's a lot of people like me. Like you were talking about people watching Law and Order, and they don't realize that it's like a pulp style of writing.
Yeah, yeah.
No one really even realizes
and
then, that.
Yeah, and pulp, I mean, if you're into those old Humphrey Bogart movies, which I am. Yeah, all pulp fiction. You know, those are all, noir was basically, they took pulp fiction paperback novels and they turned them into movies. So if you like that noir aesthetic, you like pulp fiction.
Mm-hmm. There's another parallel musically. Like, I mean, it's like you have rap, you have rock and roll, you have all these different art forms, pop music, but they all come from the blues.
Right.
Like, it's all basically just the blues done in different ways, but it's the same. You know, the DNA is American blues.
Sure.
And it's the same with like everything that we enjoy today, particularly like popular entertainment, anything that deals with particularly like the sort of like the seedier side of humans and that, whether it's action films or
Sin City or
Sin City is a perfect example.
The Wire, anything like that.
Yeah, that all comes from the so-called pulp discipline of writing.
Interesting. It's more present than I think. Like people don't like. I
it's
mean,
just
you're,
evolved.
You're, it's evolved, but your art style is very niche and mm-hmm. and I think really cool. But so the movies, how long are they? Are they voiceover story told, or is it just like visual? Like, how do you explain?
They play just like a movie that you make with people.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
They're animated. The filmmaking itself is very grounded and realistic. You know, it's not shot like a cartoon.
Okay.
But the actual images are a series of thousands of paintings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And so this first one that we put out is a short. It's like a little under 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more to prove to ourselves that
it was a test.
And what is the title of this one called?
Jailbird Diner.
Jailbird Diner?
Jailbird Diner.
I love these titles.
And that's actually in the first issue as well.
Yeah, that's adapted from a story in the first issue.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that one is a straight noir. Like that's like a 50s noir vibe
most to
it.
Yeah.
And with the movie, we did all of it ourselves as well. We did, I mean, down to the music and the Foley and everything. Like it's we essentially, when we got together, Matt and I worked together. We made online comedy content for a big company for a while. And the content was like pet oriented.
Yeah.
So were like professional cat video makers, basically. Yeah. It was very weird. And Matt and I got to know each other while we were doing that. And I think to keep our palates cleansed. We would just talk about rap and whatever books we were reading.
Yeah,
and
yeah, not just rap, but like, you know, Tom Waits.
Big influence. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So just all sorts. We have very eclectic tastes in not only our storytelling, but the music that we listen to as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So you guys are a two-man band.
Pretty much, yeah.
I know all about that. I'm a two-man band with my business partner, with our podcast and our stuff we're shooting. So it's hard. You guys put in a lot of work, but it's ambitious, and mm-hmm. you guys are putting out stuff and doing it, and it looks great. And I guess what I want to segue to is, like, let's talk about the future for you guys. Like, what does the future hold for you guys with Shit Show, all this type of stuff? Like, where do you see where is this going to go? Do you guys want to have your own, like, publishing thing, or you want your own production company? Where is this going? That's what I want
to
know.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely open to our own publishing thing.
I mean
we definitely want a production company. We want to do more of these films, these animated films, and then even segue into, you know, with actual people. Then we also want to start our we're gonna have a podcast, so I mean, we won't
heard.
it's very different from this one, so
no,
we won't be
no I think that's great.
We won't be competing with you, but it'll be like a radio theater, which is another
love it
old school thing that we're trying to revive, basically.
So you guys would write some stories and play them as a, you know, like a radio play, like,
yeah,
you know, like an old school radio play, like,
yeah.
I mean, the most famous one is Orson Welles tricking everyone,
yes,
and
exactly.
Everyone thinking that the aliens are here,
yeah.
Which
yes.
I still love that story. And there's another example. That's pulpy, right?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
H.G.
Yeah.
Wells was very pulpy.
So yeah.
What's funny
is
that...
He invented steampunk.
I think Orson Welles started trolling people before, like, trolling was around. That was one of the biggest trolls of all time.
Oh, this is the greatest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
His career was... I equate him to Nas. Because
okay, Orson Welles
is
similar
the,
to Nas.
Yeah, is okay. Very similar to Nas. Because Nas came out at 20 with Illmatic, which is one of the best rap albums of all time.
Still, nobody
can
touch
Nas,
that
I agree.
Yeah, and then
so
Orson
disruptive.
Welles, after, you know, all of his radio theater stuff, he came out with Citizen Kane, which is still considered one of the best movies of all time. Mm. And then afterwards, he put out some good stuff. I mean, he had Touch of Evil, which is very, very
fantastic.
Noir.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other ones, and they're all drawing a blank. But he had some good stuff, as did Nas, but never reached the
height. Masterpiece was his first thing.
Yeah, same with Nas.
I think Orson Welles actually admitted to that. He's like, I don't think I can ever top this movie. And I actually have a Citizen Kane poster in my house because I studied the film. I love that film. It was ahead of its time. It was just like an awesome movie. Just the way he shot it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, there was a scene where he's larger than life in the office, like, destroying papers. Like, that meant something because they shot at low angle because he looked bigger and scarier, you know?
Yeah.
He really he actually dug a hole in a floor so he can get a lower angle shot because it wasn't lower.
Well, yeah, and that's like Touch of Evil. There was like an elevator scene, and back then they were like, how did they get that shot? Because it was like before DSLRs, when you had like a tiny camera that fit in your hand.
Right.
And basically, they had to build this whole set around this elevator to make it work. And I mean, and then also you had the opening of A Touch of Evil, which is the long shot, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I like more pulp than I imagined I did. Like, I guess it's more a part of my, like, life and, like, what I like. I just, like, I never personally, like, read a lot of, like, the pulpy stuff, the style of art, but I really am intrigued by it, and I think it's awesome. And I think you guys have actually, you know, actually knowing John and getting to know more about Shit Show, it's really intriguing. And that's why I definitely wanted to talk to you guys about this, because I think it's a topic that people don't talk about too often or aren't talking about. And I think that an audience like ours, where, you know, we have comic book fans, mm-hmm. gamers, I think they would dig this.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
and the fact that you guys have movies, it's not just a zine. I mean,
no, we're coming out with a comic book.
Yeah, tell me about the comic book.
So we got, like, we've always been comic book fans.
Sure.
But I think it was when we started talking about, particularly the Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips,
mm-hmm.
Their work,
the Criminal series,
Fatale, and now they've got Kill or Be Killed.
Mm-hmm.
It was like to see that style and that tone, and Sin City really kind of kicked in the door for a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah, like totally. Frank Miller.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, to say like, oh, okay, like this is something that can be done in sequential art that we would be an appropriate fit for. And also, we read a lot of the kind of like old, like the Silver Age comics, sure, and mm-hmm, stuff like, oh, that. And great. Like, you know, I love like eerie tales, yeah, and you know. Tales from the Crypt and, wow, Vault of Horror and like Crime Does Not Pay and all these, like, you know, all these really, really cool, like, old comics that have these really crazy, like, dark stories,
yeah,
to them.
Well, the old Batman too. I mean,
I was just gonna
Gotham's
say, I was
very,
just thinking
very
Batman.
Dark. Yeah.
What a,
yeah,
he's like the most noir superhero.
I would
mean,
say so.
The,
I mean,
way,
yeah,
it's, well, originally,
totally,
in the,
he was a detective,
he
was, early on.
He had a gun in the original,
yeah,
Batman.
Yeah, and he was fighting mobsters. Yeah. So it was very much up our alley, that early stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I he's my favorite. So I read a lot of old Batman, and mm-hmm, of course I still follow Batman, and he's still treated that way. So,
yeah,
dark,
he's,
comic.
He's still a detective in ways. Yeah.
Look at Tim, oh, yeah, Burton. Tim Burton, you know, he kept the movies dark, and they actually got rid of him because they're like, it's too dark.
Yeah, right, and then they, yeah, went in with,
then,
you know, they
didn't work so
Batman
hot.
Nipples.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it was the worst thing.
It was very campy. Yeah.
But no, this is exciting, guys. Like, I really hope that the people that are listening can check out Shit Show and all the type of stuff that's coming out. Is there anything you guys want to plug that's coming, or where can we get? I know we're in California.
Uh-huh.
If you're in California, I know you could actually walk into a comic book store and buy Shit Show. Is that,
oh,
correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can go to Meltdown in Hollywood. Us, yeah. You can go to House of Secrets, yeah, in Burbank. But the easiest place would be to just go to our website, shitshowpulps.com. And you can, what if you prefer to buy it from a comic book store, of course. You,
yeah,
know,
yeah. Buy local if you can.
Yeah, but, absolutely. You know, but if you just want to go, like, we have everything at the website, and then you can see our movie there. That, like we said, that's making the festival rounds right now. We're going to be making more movies. We're going to get into feature length movies and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. And
yeah, I was going to ask about that. So you are thinking of doing features.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, well, like, what would make us happier than anything would be to be able to have all of these stories that we want to do exist in, like, prose print, you know,
sure,
like novels,
a novella, yeah,
and then also in comics and in animated movie,
yeah,
and then eventually when the time comes to do a live action remake, do that. Because, you know, when we were growing up, you'd have like a cool movie, and then you'd have like the novelization of that movie,
yeah,
and then you'd have like an extended universe, and it's like, you know, as much as we love the big extended universes of you know, whatever it is, like Marvel and DC and Star Wars and stuff like that, like, I think it's really exciting when you can have an extended universe of something that has more of like an underdog feel to it, and something that is a little grimier and grittier. So and I would say all due credit to, like, Frank Miller did that.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know,
Miller,
he,
yeah,
definitely did that.
And I mean, even, you know, one of my favorite, Richard Stark, who Donald Westlake was the author under a pseudonym, Richard Stark. He wrote all the Parker novels. Those have been made into movies. Payback with Mel Gibson was probably the most recent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, no, you had Parker with
Jason Statham.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then.
But
Lee
the one
Marvin,
with Lee Marvin, Point Blank with
Point
Lee
Blank
Marvin.
With Lee Marvin,
that
was the original.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was a movie that was based off of those books. And then very recently there was graphic novels of the Parker novels. And it was, I forget the artist, it was a Canadian that recently died.
I'm blanking on his name.
Totally blanking on his name. But, you know, so that's basically what I would love to do is be able, just like you said, have the novel or novella version of it, have the movie, and have a graphic novel or a comic.
Yeah, we just want to live in this world 24/7, man.
Exactly.
You know, like,
no, I get it.
Low cut dresses and revolvers, and you know what I mean, and plenty of bourbon, and you know, just everybody's got a secret. You can smoke like 4 packs a day and still like run. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, you could do all these cool things, and there's no consequences.
Well, yeah, you could drink a fifth of whiskey,
yeah,
and chase down a criminal and still shoot straight.
Or like, if you're having a really bad, night trying to figure something out, you just get drunk.
Yeah.
And then you wake up at your desk, and then suddenly it just comes to you. as somebody who's tried that many times,
yeah, same.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, the old write drunk, edit sober does not work for me.
A good example in like so many movies is that scene where you're drunk at your desk. The detective like can't figure it out. There's a photo on the table and his glass of whiskey magnifies.
Totally. Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah.
You guys just made me think. How many times have I seen that?
That was in Who Framed Roger
Eddie
Rabbit.
Valiant. Yeah, Eddie Valiant. Like, yeah. But that's that's a great trope.
He's holding a will in his pocket.
It's fucking awesome. Yeah, it's written in disappearing, reappearing ink. Yeah. That was so amazing.
I mean, yeah, that's a kind of a noir.
That's
I mean,
a good
it's totally. Yeah, it's like I mean, it's got a lot of the same beats as like any of those.
Yeah, and you can go to Griffith Park and go to the Toontown Tunnel anytime.
Yeah.
It's also the Back to the Future Tunnel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and two. Right. Yeah, Zemeckis loved that tunnel. He shot it two movies in a row at that
time. He knows the tunnels to use in L.A.
Yeah, and then you get the guys that have the typewriter. They have the bourbon next to the typewriter, and they can, like, get through a book. Jim Thompson would literally spend his advance on whiskey. And he would write his entire books in like a blackout, basically.
Well, yeah, and Stephen King wrote Cujo. Yeah. He woke up like you know from a coke and drug induced haze.
Yeah.
And had a manuscript for Cujo. Like,
well, then you have Hunter S. Thompson, who was
totally
never
sober. Totally. Like,
yeah, and he's very similar to Warren Zevon, who we both love, and I mean, crippling alcoholism. So
I mean, it's maybe not the. Maybe lifestyle-wise, not the best heroes to have, but man, they made some great shit.
Sure.
You know, I remember reading an interview with Old Dirty Bastard, where he, one of my favorite artists, and he pointed at his platinum albums and said, "I don't remember making any of those."
Well, didn't you say he thought he was in New York?
Okay, you know the song "Ghetto Superstar," right?
Sure.
Okay, so, and I remember when I was a kid and being like, "Why is Old Dirty Bastard in this song?" So the true story, this is a wholly true story.
Okay.
I was just reading this the other day. He thought he was in a different studio.
Yeah,
he thought he was supposed to be there.
He thought he was in New York and he was in LA,
right? Or vice versa, I don't remember.
Way.
Yeah. And so he was in the wrong coast. This is totally true. He was on the wrong coast and Praz and whoever were making this song and he just walks in. And he's like, "Yo, I'm here for the session." And he was so drunk and out of control that they figured it would just be easier to just let him record and then erase it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, it's like because they couldn't talk sense to him. And he's like, "This is good. I like this. You know, let me get on this." And they're like, And then they listen to it. They're like, "This is awesome."
Yeah.
You know, and so. Like
so, yeah. Ghetto Superstar. He was
in it. I mean, you know, it's like made the song listenable.
That
man, you know?
I did not know. I was a big Old Dirty fan.
Oh,
and,
he's the greatest.
And I,
Dirt McGirt.
That's a great fact. That's a great fact. Fun fact about him.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of fun facts, so towards the end of every episode,
that's
you know,
a good segue.
It's a great segue. I'm on a segue right now. Are you guys? No, you're not on segues.
Not really, chair.
Okay, so
we got a cyberpunk segue. Yeah.
Now that we kind of got to know you guys, you know, what you do, what is Shit Show, or the stuff you guys are doing from the movies to the comics, every guest I have, we do what's called fun facts. And I just want to hear a fun fact from each of you. And it could be about your first prom or about throwing up on your girlfriend or about, you know, we had one guest that had chickens that laid different color eggs. I've had a gauntlet of different things.
Okay.
It could even be as boring as I'm from New York. I don't know. Just we're going to start with Matt.
All right.
You're going to give me a fun fact.
I had two professions I wanted to be as a child.
Okay.
A koala catcher, because I was watching.
Sure.
I was watching.
Does that exist?
I don't know. There was these dudes on PBS. I don't know how old I was, but they were catching koala bears, and I was like, I want that. And they're nasty little fuckers.
I'll bet.
Yeah. And then my other job, my mom was like, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I think this is after the koala catching idea faded from memory. And I was like, "I want to be a doctor." And she was very proud. You know, I wanted to save people. And I was like, "I want to be like Dr. Venkman, the Ghostbuster."
Oh, my God.
So I wanted to be a Ghostbuster and a koala catcher growing up. I still have time. I'm only 30. Yeah.
You have a better shot at the
koala
catcher.
Closer to Dr. Venkman right now, I would say. But
I'd say koala catcher. Better chance.
Yeah.
Should go to Australia together.
Yeah.
Get you that job. What do you wear? Yeah. What does a koala catcher wear?
Probably something khaki.
Like
khakis. And really thick mittens.
Yeah.
You know?
What a cool logo.
Yeah.
You know? And John, any fun facts? You know?
Let's see. One of the more character-forming experiences of my life was when I went to a Brazilian voodoo ceremony.
Of course.
My family is Brazilian, and my aunt, unbeknownst to my parents, she took me to a voodoo ceremony. They don't call it voodoo there, but that's basically what it is.
Okay.
And it was great. Like, I remember walking in and I saw all these chickens. I was like, oh man, these chickens are fucked, you know? And they were, it was wild, you know? So I remember it was a big, really big eye opening.
Do they cut the chickens' heads
off? Oh yeah.
You gotta cut their heads off.
Oh yeah. And you,
it's not a voodoo
blood
experience.
Blood goes everywhere. Seriously. It was like, oh yeah, man, it was great.
Is that like Santeria or is that
they call it Macumba, and it's
Macumba.
Yeah. And there's a couple of different versions. There's Candomblé and there's Umbanda. Umbanda is my understanding is like, I'm not Mr. fucking my, you know, Macumba, but like from my understanding,
Mr. Macumba is a good
Mr.
name.
Macumba, damn, that's a good
that's
name.
That's a good pseudonym.
Oh damn, that's gonna be my gaming handle.
So Quala Catcher,
voodoo
Brazilian
priest. Yeah, voodoo priest. So yeah, that's what I wanted to be, like a voodoo priest for a while. And
you still have time.
Yeah, but you know,
those
then,
guys are old. So maybe when you're 60s,
that's
you
true.
Move to
that's
Brazil.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
That's like you a lot of cool.
You'd be the
cool
Rodney
dancing.
Dangerfield of just catch on late.
I don't know. Hey, these chickens.
Well, you guys are awesome, and we're kind of towards the end of the show here. I really appreciate coming on, both of you. I'm really happy that we got to do a pulp special. And I want you guys to plug again your website, where all your stuff, wherever you guys want to send people, Instagram, Twitters, whatever you got. Matt, do you have a personal Twitter, anything?
Well, everything I do is basically through Shit Show.
So give me all those handles.
Pulps, Shit Show Pulps across the board.
So we got Instagram.
Instagram's probably our best. We have Facebook and Twitter as well.
Yeah,
and then
we'll be the most impressive on Instagram as far as followers. If people are like follower snobs,
yeah,
Instagram.
Yeah.
You know. I'm following you guys on Instagram.
All right.
Yeah. So you guys heard it here. I'm gonna put in the comments below or in the info. I'll put the links to all your guys' stuff.
Cool.
And you could find Beta Boys Media. We're on Beta Boys Media Instagram, betaboysmedia.com, Beta Boys, maybe CompuServe, you know, Prodigy. We're still going strong. But across the board. My personal Twitter is ThisGamerSays on Twitter. My Instagram is Andy, like in Toy Story. That's a whole nother story. I thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
man.
I appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys next week on another The Beta Block. Take care, everyone. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Beta Boys Media presents The Beta Block.
The Beta Block.
The Beta Block. The Beta Block.